She will make sure your problem is solved. A moment later, another tweet came through. At Print Shop Martinez, I've been waiting 4 hours for her to call me back. Then, like the first cracks before an avalanche, from someone named at CaliGirl00, at Lauren in real life, at Print Shop Martinez, what's going on? Is this about the banner? From at Micah Mike, at Lauren in real life, at Print Shop Martinez, at CaliGirl00, you didn't hear? They spelled principal wrong. At Lauren in real life wrote back, at CaliGirl00, at Micah Mike, I understand that they made a mistake, but I don't understand why they aren't fixing it or returning my calls. Ugh! Then a new person. At Lauren in real life. I don't know you, but this sounds like a terrible business, and the way they are handling it is even worse. At Print Shop Martinez. They kept coming and coming, and I gave it one more try. At Lauren in real life. We sincerely apologize for this and are doing all we can to resolve the situation. Please DM or call for updates. I shut the computer. Eduardo was finally finished with his call. This banner thing is becoming a real problem on Twitter, I told him. He showed me his cell phone screen, open to the Twitter app. He'd been following along with everything. Maybe Alexander was right about all of this. We're an old-fashioned business. This technology may not suit us. He shrugged and tossed his phone on the desk. Then he added, You've been doing a great job, though. I wouldn't have known what to say. Thanks. Maybe when we get her the banner, she'll delete the tweets, or at least say it had a happy ending. Eduardo glanced toward Alexander's studio. Maybe, he said. But his voice lacked optimism. I was about to ask why, when Nev emerged and crossed as swiftly as she could to the phone. She flipped through the green binder and then dialed. Jessica, she said. It's Nev. So lovely to hear your voice. No, it isn't ready quite yet, but that's why I'm calling. I know we promised it by end of day, but Alexander is running a bit behind. I assure you, they look gorgeous. We're going to deliver them to your office tomorrow morning. No, we don't mind at all. That will give you plenty of time to have them for the dinner, right? Wonderful. No, thank you. Say hello to Meg and have a wonderful night. And please don't worry about a thing. She hung up and dug her thumb into the space between her brows. Eduardo rose and wrapped his arms around her. All this stress isn't good for you, he murmured. I know. I'll try not to get wrapped up in it. Unfortunately, there is one thing you should see. He handed her his phone and she scrolled through. Well, perfect. She sighed and climbed the stairs again. She tapped on Alexander's door and opened it, but didn't enter. We have a Twitter problem.
I said I didn't want the Twitter in the first place. We've lived without it for 30 years, so it doesn't much concern me.
It's just the principal-principal banner?
I know. It needs to be done over.
Okay, so it's on your to-do list? Near the top? I heard some grumbled words, and then the door shut. She made her way down again. We have to go, Nev said to me, hand on her enormous belly. We have an appointment. So much swarmed through my mind. Like, should I still leave at 5, even if there was no answer? And how could they leave me alone with Alexander, who didn't even know my name? But I could only get out the simplest of questions. What should I tell Lauren? That it's being handled, Nev said, slinging her purse over her shoulder. Do you know, like, a specific time or anything? Not yet. Maybe just a window? Sorry. Are you coming back after the appointment? No, it's 4 already, and the appointment is all the way in Oakland, and with the commute traffic... She looked at me. Listen, we try our best. Sometimes we make mistakes. Sometimes we let people down, even though we really don't want to. He has this huge order for a longtime client to get through for tomorrow, and then he has this one banner for a new client, and I don't know if it's all going to get done. He's trying. I can't promise anything. Then they were gone, and I was alone in the downstairs of Print Shop. The front door was locked, and the open sign faced in. Twitter was quiet for a moment, besides the occasional ping of someone following us back. I had more tweets scheduled, but I pushed them out a couple of days so that our bad publicity would have time to die down. I clicked on @Lauren in Real Life's profile again and scrolled to see what I could learn about her. I saw a lot about school and principals, so I tried to find where it all started. There it was, 3 months back. Thanks for electing me to be student rep for the hiring committee for our new principal. I promise to ask tough questions and be your voice. There was a photo attached, and I clicked to expand it. And as soon as it filled the screen, I was bowled over. This girl. Short, shaggy hair and no makeup. A confident grin and a shirt with a picture of John Muir on it, which some people would find so nerdy, but I found irresistible. In fact, to my surprise, as I scrolled, I found nearly everything about our worst Twitter nightmare irresistible. There were tweets about the final candidates for her school's new principal, urging people to come to the final interviews to weigh in, asking for issues that are important to her classmates. Then there was the announcement. Couldn't be more excited to introduce Alhambra's new principal. Dr. Joyce Hope will join us at the end of summer. And in between all of these, there were other tweets, pictures mostly, of hikes she'd taken, close-ups of flowers and plants, blurry bunnies as they hopped across a trail, even a family of foxes. I've read some of John Muir's essays. He had lived in our town, so his books are strewn through the cafes and everyone's houses. But I don't come from an outdoorsy family. Looking at her feed made me want to try walking the hills he used to walk. I wanted to try it with her. I knew we hadn't met, but I recognized this feeling. A DM appeared across the screen as I was learning all I could about her. Have I been forgotten? No, I shot back. Not at all. I'm working on it. Will you try back in a couple of hours? I'm really so sorry. Suddenly, she had answered all the swarming questions from Nev and Eduardo's departure. I would stay past 5 o'clock. I would stay as long as it took. And it didn't matter if Alexander didn't know my name yet. It was up to me to make this right. But I still didn't know how to do that. I figured all I could do for now was wait. He'd have to emerge eventually. I kept scrolling to find out more about Lauren. I found more pictures of her, and they made my hands shake and my stomach ache in that glorious, lovesick way. Then I made myself do something else. I wasn't even on the clock anymore, so I looked up hiking trails and then John Muir quotes. I set up more tweets, even though I technically shouldn't have been working, because something I like about myself is that I care about the things I do. I know Print Shop's Twitter got off to a rough start, but I felt optimistic for its future. And then, much later, the phone rang. Print Shop, I said. Hey, this is Lauren. Her voice against my ear. My throat seized up. I tried to say hi, but nothing came out. I'm the one who ordered the banner. I've been tweeting with one of you about this. Right, that's me, I said. My name is Evelyn, Evie. Why was I telling her both versions of my name? She had no idea who I was, and no reason to care.
Oh. She sounded surprised or thrown off or something, and I wondered why.
Well, I'm sorry for my rudeness. Just please tell me that my banner is going to be finished tonight. It's already late, and I know you guys are closed, and it's just... it's really important to me. It's for something I've been working on for a long time, and if I don't get it tonight, I won't be able to use it at all.
I'm so sorry about all this, I said. This is actually my first day. Everyone else left except Alexander. He's the printer. He's working upstairs still. I'm actually supposed to have left, but I'm trying to see if I can get this taken care of for you.
Thank you.
Sure. I'll let you know when I know more.
As soon as I hung up, the phone rang again. Breathless, I picked it up, expecting it to be her. Instead, it was a man's voice.
What a surprise! Who is this?
Evie, I said. May I ask who this is? But he just sighed.
Usually I call and let it ring to remind him what time it is. But if he has reinforcements at this time in the evening, things must not be going well. I assume he's holed up upstairs, but if he emerges, please remind him that his husband has dinner ready.
I will. He sighed again and hung up. Then a DM came through. There was more that I wanted to say but forgot to, so here it goes. I chose your company over other more affordable ones because I believe in local economies and in supporting businesses whose values reflect my own. I wanted to choose a business right here in town where my school is and where I live. I wanted to choose a queer business. I wanted to choose an independent business, an established one. Not some trendy new one where I upload an image and they send it to me printed on glass or some shit and delivered via drone like 2 minutes later and it's great for the welcome party and then go straight into the recycling. This banner you guys made is really beautiful, and it would be perfect if what I was talking about were the principle of Hope and not a woman named Hope who is going to be our principal. I know it's late now, and maybe you're the only person left there, and maybe you can't do anything. But I need to say that just now when we talked, it was the first time I felt truly hopeful about this all day. If there is any chance this can still work out, I would really appreciate it. I'm working at my school tonight to get ready for the welcome party in the morning. I will be here for hours, so no time is too late for me. Okay, good night for now. Something in her good night made me blush all over again. The intimacy of it. Of course, I couldn't know for sure, but I doubted she would have chosen that phrase if she thought she was tweeting to Nev or Alexander. But then I felt foolish for hoping because she had no idea who I was, or that I went to high school a few miles away from her, that we were the same age, that we both liked girls, that the first glimpse of her picture sent a current up my spine, sent my blood rushing, made me think immediately about being kissed by her. It was only my voice, and only for a few moments. I banished the fantasy that my hello sent some kind of spark through the phone, and reread her message. I decided to be brave. The stairs to Alexander's studio creaked as I climbed them, and I couldn't help but think of Nev going up and down with her huge belly each day. I didn't blame her for not returning that night. The door was closed, and I heard the rustle of a sheet of paper inside. I knocked, loudly enough that I wouldn't have to wonder if he'd heard me.
"Yes," I heard from the other side.
I opened the door to the studio. I had imagined a room full of metal and paint and machinery, but I had not expected this. I didn't know how the floor of the loft could hold it all. There were so many machines, so many papers, So many tubs of paint, so many metal alphabets in different fonts and sizes. I stepped into another world. I felt it. A giant clock on the wall said what I already knew. It was 8 o'clock and getting dark, and Alexander was deep in a more important project, and we were running out of time. "Hi," I said. "I'm Evie."
"Yes, our new hire. Our last new hire was a decade ago. Momentous day, this one."
I couldn't tell if he was joking. Nothing about my arrival seemed momentous to him, but being the first employee to join them in so long must count for something.
He looked out the window instead of at the clock.
"It's far past closing time, yet you're still here."
"I've been dealing with Lauren. She ordered the principal banner. I know it seems like we've missed our chance to get it to her, but it's not too late. She's still working, and I will bring it to her when it's finished." He was still looking at his current project, and not at me. He hadn't even so much as nodded in response. So I took another deep breath and said, "I know I'm brand new, and this isn't my place to say, but I just need to say it. Please forgive me in advance. But the way I see it is that we accepted this girl's job, and we took her money, and we gave her something with a major error. She needs it by tonight, and we need to fulfill our obligation to give her what she ordered and paid for." Alexander ran a hand through his silver hair. His glasses reflected the lamp on his table. And then he tilted his face toward me, and the reflection was gone. And I could see his eyes, and they were smiling.
"Ah," he said, "a straight shooter. I like that."
He glanced at his watch.
"Do me a favor. Call Terry. Our home number's on the bulletin board. And tell him I'll be home late. Later. And then let our disgruntled young customer know that we will have her banner to her by 11.
"Yes," I said. "Yes." My eyes burned, and I didn't even feel stupid. I felt like I'd done something right. I made someone listen, and not just anyone, but Alexander. Radical, cranky, brilliant Alexander who believed in art, who believed in living up to your promises, who didn't even know what the Twitter was but wanted to do the right thing anyway.
"I'm going to need a hand," he said, "after you're finished with your phone calls."
Terry listened to my bad news and then said,
"Could have called that one," and hung up.
I picked up the phone to call Lauren, but then lowered the receiver. In a few hours, I was going to meet her. I didn't want to waste any more of our introduction on phone calls, so I DM'd her instead. "Let me know where to find you at 11, and I will be there. New banner in hand."
"Really? Thank you. South parking lot of Alhambra High. Text me when you get here. Thank you again."
And then she gave me her phone number. I copied it into my contacts, full of hope that I'd be using it for a long time, not only later that night. Alexander gave instructions like he'd been teaching all his life. We started by finding the stencil he had cut out of a long but paper-thin sheet of metal. He looked at the principal and laughed, hands on his head for a full minute, then had me cut and iron a piece of cloth while he cut a new stencil to replace the wrong word with the right one. Finally, we lay the fabric on one of his massive work tables, and he laid the stencil over it. The new principal fitting in a space he cut out of the old one. He taught me how to open a can of paint and how to mix it. The most brilliant grass green, the richest blue, the happiest yellow. In the midst of it all, Terry showed up with dinner. Coq au vin for three on ceramic plates with silverware and cloth napkins. Alexander said he was too busy to eat, but sat down anyway. Terry asked me questions about myself, and I tried my best to sound interesting enough to be worthy of their company. The food was delicious, and I wondered how many nights Terry cooked that way, only to walk the few blocks from their downtown Victorian to dine in the dusty shop. And then we were finished eating, and Terry had collected the dishes and left. Alexander made some final touches and placed the banner under hot lamps. I watched the paint change color as it dried. At one point, I reached to touch the tip of a letter to test it, but Alexander barked, "Not yet!" It was 10:15, but it would only take me a few minutes to get to Alhambra. Each time I thought of parking there and finding Lauren, my heart raced. Finally, Alexander declared it dry. It was truly beautiful, like something from the past. Something that would last just how Lauren hoped it would. I could see it hanging in the new principal's office forever, reminding her of how she had been chosen and the importance of her work. He folded the fabric into a square. I could see that he still had more to do for his other order, and I understood that this was because of me. The banner printing had taken longer than I thought it would. "Do you want me to come back and help with the rest?" I offered. He smiled at me. "I can't afford that much overtime." I didn't know what to say. "Just joking. The rest is easy. Drive carefully through the night, and I'll see you tomorrow."
"I'm not scheduled again until Tuesday."
"Then I will see you on Tuesday."
The drive to Alhambra High School took less than 10 minutes, but my concept of time was off. The red lights were brighter than ever. The sky was dark and the trees rose tall around me. I could hear my own breath. I was aware of everything. And then I was pulling into the south parking lot, like Lauren told me to. As soon as I parked and turned the car off, I saw a figure in a lit doorway. Her figure. I climbed out of the car, banner in hand, and headed toward her. "So that's how it started," I say. "I've left out some of the details, of course, like just how carefully I studied your photos and how they made me feel, but I don't want to hold back too much. I want to give this all I can. So I dare to touch the hem of your shirt and add, I saw this in one of your Twitter pictures. I love John Muir." You cock your head.
"You looked through my profile?"
I was curious about our disgruntled customer. I can hear the nervousness in my voice, but I tell myself it's okay that I'm nervous. It's okay if you can tell how it feels to be this close to you. I look into your face, allow my gaze to linger, and I see something register in yours. A moment of surprise in your eyes that turns into a shy smile of your own.
"So I should be heading back in. Thanks again."
I nod. You take the folded banner from my hands. Take a half step backward toward the bright classroom. And before my disappointment has time to register, before I can wonder if this is all there will ever be between us, you say,
"You're coming with me, right?"
Hourglass by E.B. Zoboy. Read by Bonnie Turpin. "Now, you think you're better than me?" I say while standing outside of Geraldine's, the only fancy dress boutique in town. I'm staring at a mannequin wearing a fitted white sequined dress, and she's looking down at me over the tip of her nose with a stupid smile on her face like she thinks she's all that. I look the mannequin up and down with her bent leg meant to show off the sexy slit in her dress, and those high-heeled shoes that don't even fit. Her hand is held out as if she's supposed to be holding a cocktail or a glass of champagne. Her wig is the worst thing about her. Dolores, the sales girl, didn't even bother to brush and style it, so this mannequin looks a hot mess.
"Can you please come inside, Cherish?"
Stacy says, poking her head out from inside the boutique. I open the door to the sound of wind chimes and the scent of cheap perfume and steamed dresses. I inhale because it smells like Stacy's whole house. Her mother's been shopping at Geraldine's since we were both little. My own mother has never bought a thing from here, and neither have I. Not even my prom dress. I don't plan to, either. But Stacy's been dragging me here all week, trying on dress after dress. And I'm her designated photographer. She posts the pics and asks her followers to vote on their favorite look. So, naturally, she gets all the haters who comment on every single wrong thing about her body, face, and hair. And once even her toes that were poking out from beneath a long gown. But she takes it like a champ. She doesn't care. My best friend, Stacy, has enough ego for the both of us. "Okay," she says, standing back against the dressing room mirrors in the far end of the boutique. "What about this one?" The black dress is sleeveless, fitted at the top, flares out at the bottom, and barely covers her legs. "Didn't you wear something like that for the fifth grade dance?" I ask.
"I sure did. Do you think I should be more risque? I am 18, you know. So do I show more boob or my butt? Or both?"
She holds out two different dresses in each hand.
"I got more likes on the pic I posted wearing this one.
Without a body to fill them in, one looks like a spiraling slinky, and the other looks like a fishing net."
"Stacy, just pick a dress and let's go," I say, annoyed.
She rolls her eyes and goes back into the fitting room, shaking her booty at me. As the mirror door swings open, I catch a glimpse of myself wearing a plain t-shirt and jeans. Tall, wide, frumpy, and sorry. It's noon on a Sunday, and I really did just roll out of bed to shop with Stacy. She wanted to get here before the other girls came into the store. The prom is next Friday, so mostly everyone at Kingsbridge High has their dresses, tuxes, and limos all set up. But Stacy wants to make it a whole fashion show where she dares herself to find the perfect dress in a small town at the very last minute, and still be the best at everything for the prom. I turn to the snooty mannequin in the store's window. She has her back to me now. I notice the clearance rack in a far corner of the store and a sign that reads, "Plus Size." A long burgundy gown is displayed in front of the rack, something a great aunt would wear to her 60th birthday dinner. I've never dared to look through those dresses for something in my size. None of them are like a slinky or a tube or have a slit up the side. None of them hit above the knee or drop down low at the neckline. None of them ooze hot or sexy. None of them are anything I would wear while standing remotely close to Stacy, who is shaped like an actual mannequin, a straight-up Barbie. I browse around the store like I've done so many times before. I can't remember the last or first time I wore a dress. So the prom was not an event I wanted to go experimenting with my look for. My own mother lives in her work uniform or a bathrobe. I spot a stack of flyers and a small pile of business cards near the cash register. The flyer is a photo of a bunch of ladies wearing long, fitted, colorful gowns in patterns I've never seen before. Bold and ethnic. The ladies are all in different shapes and sizes. Above the photo reads, "Mamadou's African Tailoring. One size don't fit all." "What's African tailoring?" I asked Dolores. She shrugs while going through her phone.
"Some black man and his son dropped those off. They say they fix dresses." Like at the cleaners? I guess, she says. So a new black family moved to Kingsbridge? I ask.
You should know better than me, she mumbles.
I stare at the flyer once more before putting it down and returning to the conceited mannequin as it stares out of the store's front window. Without thinking twice, I step closer to it and smack it upside its head. It tumbles forward, hitting the window. You are not all that, I say.
Dolores rushes over to prop it up again. She struggles with the mannequin a bit until it's upright. Then she turns and squints her blue-shadowed and mascaraed eyes at me. Stacy comes out of the fitting room to see my face about to burst into a laugh. She doesn't hold hers in, so we both let out a long, hard laugh as Dolores shakes her head and goes back to scrolling through her phone at the cash register.
Don't hate her 'cause she's beautiful, Stacy says as she walks over to Dolores to pay for the slinky black dress. It's the one her followers voted on a few days ago, the one with slits along the sides that almost show off every single part of her body. I don't hate her, I say, side-eyeing the now propped-up mannequin. She hates me because I'm beautiful. I bat my eyelashes and flash a sexy smile at Stacy, and she laughs even harder. For a quick moment, I wonder if she's laughing at the joke or at me. I refresh my email over and over again as I sit in Stacy's passenger seat on the drive home. It's the only thing I can do in Stacy's tiny car, where the top of my head brushes against the car's roof upholstery and my knees are almost curled up to my chest. It's a health hazard riding in her car, 'cause I'm 6'5", and her two-door hatchback is made for tiny teeny boppers like her, 5'4", and only about 100 pounds. But I still insist on wearing a seatbelt, even though I feel like I have to fold myself twice over just to get it around my hips. I don't complain, not out loud anyway. But I'm sure Stacy can hear it in my breathing, my sighs, and grunts. She ignores it, thank goodness. It's June, and I haven't heard back from the 3 colleges that waitlisted me. But I'm keeping hope alive because there is still a week left of high school. I've started getting a bunch of emails about registering for my fall classes at Shaw County Community College, and Dad has already sent in my deposit. Still, I have a cardboard box pushed to a corner of my room full of the stuff I'll be taking with me if I get off any of those wait lists. When I get off those wait lists, I'm putting it out there in the universe. I desperately need to go away for college. And each of those schools are far from Kingsbridge, New York. Don't tell me you're checking for homework, Stacy says. And if you are, I'm going to your house to throw that overstuffed raggedy book bag in the trash. High school is over, Cherish. No one gives any homework the last week before school ends. And even if they did, why would you throw my bag out anyway? I ask, knowing good and well that Stacy never follows through on her threats to make me like her, to make me not care, to make me more fun. Because we should be celebrating. I really want you to get out of this funk. Cheer up, Cherish. This has been her favorite thing to say to me. Cheer up, Cherish, for as long as I can remember. I am cheered up, just not like her. I'm Stacy's sidekick, her road dog, her ride-or-die chick, and we are nothing alike. That's why we've been friends since the 3rd grade. Even as her different cliques and crews came and went, I was still her loyal friend, waiting to hear how so-and-so and this and that betrayed her and stabbed her in the back. And with me by her side to tell her how dumb she was acting with a guy or how cute she didn't look in an outfit, she was leaving Kingsbridge High with a bang, a slammin' prom dress, a new hairdo, and a plane ticket to Oberlin College. She was headed halfway across the country, and still, I was her sidekick, cheering her on.
You should be celebrating, I say. I'll be stuck here seeing these same houses and roads and people for the next 4 years.
2 years, Cherish. It's community college. You can always transfer after 2 years.
2 years is a long time in this town. And besides, we all know what happens to most of the people here. Kingsbridge Elementary, Middle School, High School, and Shaw County Community College, then the mall or the state prison, I say with a knot forming in my belly, because I think I may have just described my whole life in this town, my past, present, and future. Don't forget the diner, Stacy adds. About 7 people from our class will be working at Margot's Diner. I grunt and throw my head back against the seat. I really should have applied to a safe school, but no, it was either leave Kingsbridge or bust. And I'm busting right now, Stacy. I'm about to fucking explode.
No, you're not. You'll be fine. And, you know, you'll have more freedom. Go to the city on the weekends, just like we did a few months ago. And not every single person from Kingsbridge will be going to Shaw. I'm not going to Shaw.
Rub it in, why don't you? She's quiet as she turns up my street and pulls into my driveway. It's sunny out, but my little house still manages to have a dark cloud over it. And I'm about to step right into the storm.
Okay, Stacy says, turning off her engine. I'm gonna ask you one last time. Please come to the prom.
No. I'll be fine, trust me, I say, not wanting to have this conversation with her for the umpteenth time.
I don't mind if you're my date, Cherish, she says all sweet, slipping her hand into mine.
Is that how you want to leave Kingsbridge? Letting everybody think we're a couple?
That would be kind of badass, you know. All my exes would be so pissed.
I'm not going to be part of your lesbian revenge fantasy, Stacy, I say as I open the car door.
Aw, come on, please, she laughs.
I close the door as the passenger side window rolls down. You already agreed to go with Alex, right? He's a good guy. I try not to laugh, because Alex is like a brother to us. He and Stacy are going as friends, since Stacy couldn't get any of her good-looking exes to take her to the prom. Except one. And we're both already clear about why he's not an option.
You're making fun of me, aren't you?
Yes, I am. Just know that you're making him look good. He should pay you. Even I wouldn't date Alex if he asked me. And he has, back in the 6th grade. By that time, I was already half a foot taller than him. Even though he and Stacy are the same height, Alex still looks like a middle schooler. And with heels on, Stacy will look like Alex's mama, since he hasn't made it out of puberty yet. All this was because she promised me not to go with the guy I hated most in this world. The guy she once loved most in the world. Brian Price. Once Stacy pulls out of my driveway, I check the mailbox. Just like every day since waiting on my college admissions letters, I hold the stack of envelopes against my heart and make a wish out into the air that I got into Spelman. The day the letter arrived, and it wasn't either a yes or a no, was one of the worst days of my life. I was stuck waiting, again. Inside the house, I rushed to the computer to find my little brother, Honor, playing Minecraft. I mush his head and tell him to get out of the way. He doesn't move.
Come on, Honor, I need to check my email.
Check it later, he says, still not moving. I start to grab his arm and he calls out for Dad. I quickly let go and cover his mouth. I look around our one-story house and there's no sign of my father on the couch or in the kitchen, so I pinch Honor's arm.
Ow! What'd you do that for?
Shut up and get off the computer,
I whisper yell through clenched teeth.
You'll wake up Dad.
I quickly check my email for any news from Spelman or Hampton or even Florida A&M. They all waitlisted me, and they are miles and miles away from here, Virginia, Georgia, and Florida. They're historically black colleges that are nothing like my small white town where my family is one of 14 black families and we stand out like four giant oak trees in a forest of shrubs. My parents and I are over 6'5" tall and big. And Honor would probably have his growth spurt this summer since he's going into the 7th grade. The few times we walk downtown together, people either think we're oversized basketball players or freaks. No matter how long we've been living in this town, we never fit in. I never fit in. And Brian Price was the person who reminded me of this over and over again. So I'd be hiding in plain sight at an HBCU with all those black kids from all over the country in different shapes and sizes. And I was sure there would be other girls like me, too visible and invisible at the same time. I check all three of my email accounts. Nothing. Except for a shitload of messages from Shaw County. I ignore them all. A loud thud comes from my parents' bedroom, letting me know that Dad is up and moving about. He swings open his bedroom door and makes his way down the narrow hallway into the living room. The top of his head almost brushes against the ceiling, and he has to duck when he reaches the archway leading out of the hall. I search my mind for something to say about the missing groceries before he even asks. But I've gone blank. I stand up instead, ready to head out the door.
Where are you going?
He asks, with his usual scraggly voice. I stutter for a bit, then I tell the truth. I forgot the groceries. He doesn't say anything, but rushes to the kitchen and searches the fridge and cabinets for something, anything. There's a quarter full carton of milk. There are a couple of cans of beans. There's some leftover roasted chicken, but he'd have to pick at the bones to make a sandwich with the almost moldy rye bread from last week. I stand in the kitchen and sigh. It isn't about the food or the money. It's about the time. It's always about time. My parents watch over people serving time. My brother and I wait for the time that each of our parents would be home together at the same time. We all coordinate our times to use the car for other things besides getting to work and school, and we wait for Dad's paycheck to clear before we can shop for food, a couple of $100 for groceries before it was time to pay the other bills. So time affected food, affected money, affected me. Dad bangs on one of the cabinet doors, making both me and Honor jump. Before he starts yelling about time and money and food, I rush out of the house just as Mama is pulling into the driveway. I walk past her without saying a word, heading straight for Stacy's to beg her to take me to Food Town. My heart is pounding out of my chest, and my throat is dry and tight. Stacy's house is about a mile from my house, and I shouldn't have walked it in this June heat. Dad was blowing up my phone, and I was ignoring him. I knew he'd want me to come back just so he could yell at me and tell me how irresponsible I am and that I shouldn't even think about going away to college because I couldn't remember a simple thing like buying food for the house. And that I should stay away from that white girl, Stacy, because she got my head all up in the clouds. Anything Dad would say to me right now would be out of anger and hunger. And Mama would be his amen corner, co-signing everything. I didn't need any of that right now. I spot Stacy's car as I reach her house, a two-story surrounded by a perfectly manicured lawn and rose bushes. I can imagine what she's up to right now, messing with her hair, on the internet talking shit, or trying on different outfits and adding more mirror selfies to her phone's queue. Her parents' car isn't in the driveway, so I exhale. They try too hard around me. They ask too many questions about my parents, my brother, and school. I won't have to talk to them about college. They will try to fix it for me. They will ask me how can they help. I don't want to deal with that right now either. At the curb in front of her house is another parked car, though. A small black one. I've seen it before at school, but I can't place the owner. I reach the front door, and instead of knocking, I open it. Her house is unlocked during the day. We never do that at our house. I don't call out her name because I've done this before, walked into her bedroom unannounced. She'll squeal and throw a towel at me, then we'll sink back into our usual shit-talking. So when I quickly open the door, she's there, on her bed, with a boy. This isn't the first time. I don't gasp or embarrassingly shut the door. I stand there and stare and make sure that the boy she's with, Brian Price, sees me unmoving and unafraid. And that's a lie because my insides drop down to the floor, sink to the bottom of my feet. Stacy wasn't supposed to be with him. Not now. Not ever. Not like this. Before. November of senior year was when I wanted to kill Brian Price. The meme had been going around for 2 days before it got to me. I didn't know then that Stacy had been the first to see it. I wasn't always Stacy's designated photographer. She would take photos of me and of us and post them, and I wouldn't care, even if I got comments about how pretty I looked or about my outfit or my hair. None of it fazed me. Until a photoshopped meme reached my phone, and I saw my face on a gorilla's body, a gorilla wearing a wig and a dress. And I didn't run out of school and hide and cry. I approached every single person sitting around me in that cafeteria and demanded that they tell me who did it. I yanked collars and pulled arms and yelled in faces until Principal Stewart called me into the office and asked me not to bully the students. I didn't show him the photo. I cursed him out instead. I was suspended for 2 days. The worst of it all was when my parents found out. They thought I was bullying. I didn't show them the photo either. And I wasn't the only one. More and more of these photoshopped memes kept coming up, and it was easy to trace them back to one fake account. As one of the smallest seniors and one of four black kids in our grade, Alex got it the worst. So when his parents came up to the school and threatened to take it with the authorities, Principal Stewart had to do something. Brian Price was suspended for a week. Brian Price had been Stacy's boyfriend since sophomore year. Brian Price was always an asshole. Stacy broke up with him because he'd attacked basically all her friends, me most importantly. Everyone knew, especially me, that she still loved him. That didn't stop him from being an asshole, and she knew that if she stayed with him, she would have been an asshole by association. Now, on the last day of high school, no one shows up to Mr. Randall's Shakespeare class. Well, about 10 of us are here, and we look like the dumbest kids graduating from Kingsbridge High. If it was senior cut day, no one told us. If there was some sort of after-school party that everyone left to attend, we weren't invited. I look around at the other familiar faces in the classroom. I know all their names. Some I've known since middle school or elementary school. I've spoken to only 5 of them, and that was either for a group project or for some silly small talk over the years. One kid's got his head down and is straight up snoring. Another girl is doodling in her notebook. They all have senioritis, but a much milder case since they're here, sitting in a classroom with me, probably the only senior who is immune to senioritis. Senioritis is a plague when there are only a few days left of high school, the prom, and graduation are coming up, and no one wants to do shit. Teachers know about senioritis too, of course, and the ones who don't care about any of it give us quizzes, exams, and homework assignments. Those are my favorite teachers. I need a test or a big group project to take my mind off ignoring Stacy, hiding in different parts of the school to avoid her, and not answering her calls or texts. I fucked up at home with all my chores and standing in as honor's second mom. The only good friend I had is fucked up, and my whole future is fucked up too, because I've done all this work in high school and still ended up at a fucking community college. So for the first time in all 4 years at Kingsbridge, I take a nap. I take a fucking nap and shut out this stupid world. My phone buzzes, and instead of looking to see who's calling or texting, I turn to the classroom door, because this has always been how Stacy gets my attention. She'd call or text and stand in the doorway waving. This was also how she'd get me in trouble and have my phone taken away by Mr. Randall. But no one is standing there. So I check to see that I've gotten an email. It's from Florida A&M. So I ask Mr. Randall to be excused. I rush out of the classroom and lean against one of the nearby walls and slide down to the floor. I hold the phone close to my heart, shut my eyes, and inhale. When I open the email, the first word I see is congratulations, and I scream. My voice echoes in the hallway, and kids come out of the classroom staring at me with my big old smile. I stand up, wanting to do cartwheels through the hall. And even as Stacy starts to slowly make her way toward me, not knowing whether to smile or ask me if I'm okay, I yell out, I got into Florida A&M! I don't read the details. I don't check the financial aid information. I don't know how I'll get down to Florida, but I am getting the fuck out of this town! Stacy wants to pretend like nothing happened. She wants to pretend that she hasn't been seeing Brian all this time, and she's been bullshitting me and everybody else. She asks me to come over and celebrate about Florida. She parks outside my house, honking, refusing to come to the door like always. But not this time. This time, I wait for her to come to me. This time, she knocks and I open the door and step out. She's never been inside my house. You fucked up, I say. He's sorry, she says. Since when? Since the moment it happened. When I saw that picture, or when he got caught? Look, he stopped doing any of it, right? Wrong. He was dead wrong, and you're dead wrong. I open the door to step back inside. Cherish, please, she says, all sweet and with puppy dog eyes. Cheer up. Fuck you, Stacy, I say, slamming the door in her face. I have until Monday to accept the seat at Florida A&M. I'll be losing the deposit Dad sent to Shaw County. He'll have to come up with another deposit and part of my tuition and stuff for my dorm room and my plane ticket. Still, I let the thoughts of packing and saying goodbye to Kingsbridge wander around my mind. This is not a dream anymore. It's as real as breathing, and it's so close. But something weighs heavy on my body. This is a moment I want to share with Stacy. I was there for her when she got her acceptance letter to Oberlin. We were supposed to go out to the mall and movies that night, but she chose to stay home. Now I know. She chose to be with Brian, the asshole. I searched through her Instagram feed to see all her posts about what shoes she'll be wearing, her different hairstyles, makeup colors, the works. I wonder who is taking her pictures now. Then, a new photo pops up. It's of her and Brian, and the caption, New Prom Bay. I immediately text Alex. Hey, are you still going to the prom with Stacy? He doesn't reply right away, so I head to the kitchen to get started on dinner. Mama had to do the groceries and miss a couple of hours of sleep. I've been making up for my fuck-up since that day by cooking all the meals, cleaning, and helping Honor with his homework. My parents were more than excited about my getting into Florida A&M, but not too long afterward, Dad started crunching the numbers. Still, I had until Monday to just hold on to this bit of happiness for a moment. No, she's going with Brian. Did she cancel on you at the last minute? No, I was never going with Stacy. Who told you that?
Stacy did.
She said I could ride in her limo. You'll still go, even if Brian is there. Yeah.
Why, Alex? You don't remember what he did to you?
Hey, it's a free ride in a limo. I don't have to pay for it.
Seriously?
So who are you taking to prom? He doesn't respond. I wait and wait. Nobody. I don't respond. I pull out a package of ground meat and hamburger helper. 10 minutes go by before I ask him. Do you want to go with me?
No. Because you don't want to go with me.
Sorry. I was just...
Save it.
Alex knew that he would be a pity date. He was right. The only reason I was rethinking the whole thing was because of my fucked-up ex-friend and her asshole boyfriend. I scroll through each of Stacy's pictures, and there are more of her and Brian now, as if she's announcing to the world that they're back together, that they're not hiding their relationship anymore, that she doesn't give a fuck about what he's done to her friends, because she was leaving Kingsbridge and telling everyone to kiss her ass. I slam my phone against the counter. Honor glances at me. I look around the house. It feels small. I want to stretch my arms out and push the walls and make everything stretch far and wide because this place is beginning to feel like a prison. The day before the prom, I end up in Geraldine's because I'm going, after all. That was the plan from the beginning. Work my butt off. Get accepted into an HBCU, get ready to move out of the state, give myself a complete makeover from head to toe, and party like I've lost all my senses. This was all supposed to be with Stacy's help. This was all planned before that thing with Brian, and before this new thing with Brian. Since I'm going to be on my own down in Florida, I had to start now. I could pull myself together and be my own damn sidekick, road dog and ride-or-die chick. I'd spent a whole night online looking for dresses and creating a private Pinterest board of women with bodies like mine. Models, even. Some with deep brown skin like mine. Their dresses were short and flirty and in bright colors, or they were long and glamorous with revealing slits. The shimmering fabrics hugged their curves, and they held their heads high. Confident, badass, and they didn't seem to give a fuck. I could see it. I could imagine it. I could look just like those women. I played around with my hair in the mirror. I pulled down the top of my sweater to show off my bare shoulder, and even pouted my lips. I went from prom dresses to Florida A&M's website, to YouTube videos of current and former students, and I saw myself in each of their faces. I could see it. I could imagine it. I was going to be one of those students, and I wouldn't hide. I would blend in and stand out at the same time. I go through 5 dresses, and none of them are like the ones I'd seen on those models online. Dolores takes photo after photo just in case the mirror isn't telling the whole truth. I do look like somebody's aunt or a burnt-out teacher. You don't have anything sexy in my size? I finally ask.
Sexy is a state of mind,
Dolores says, still engrossed in her phone. I try on another dress that fits just right at the top, but hits right at my calves, which isn't sexy at all. No matter